Hello, and welcome to Multiform, an Xbox podcast. Every week we get together to talk about the news and the games we've been playing. This is episode 97. I'm Tim Shelton, and this week I'm joined by Gus Harden.
Hello.
And Spencer Rain.
Hello.
So I want to start by saying I've caught a rare summer cold, and so my voice is a little more raspy. Oh,
is that what we're calling it?
Well, it's not coronavirus.
All right. Did you get tested?
I did not get tested, but I don't have any of the symptoms except for a small cough. I have more common cold symptoms like a sore throat and a cough and a sore back, achy back. Anyway, though, my voice is definitely different than normal, so I apologize.
A little bit more raspy than normal.
Yeah, which, hey, maybe you'll like that. Either way, we're going to talk about some video games, and this would have been E3 week, and it didn't actually end up being as quiet as I thought it would be, because there were actually quite a bit of large announcements and things that leaked out this week, so in some ways, it kind of felt like E3, even though we didn't get new demos or trailers or press conferences in the same way we normally would. We did get some things that made it pretty eventful. So I think we've got quite a packed show as far as news to discuss. But before we get to the news, let's talk about what we've been playing this week. And I guess I'll go to Gus first.
So I have been playing a lot of World of Warships Legends. Spencer and I have been kind of getting into that. Couldn't tell you why I started playing it, but I think one day I was just scrolling through my games and apps, looking for something that I hadn't really played. And I think it was partially because I've been playing a lot of Hearts of Iron 4. Also couldn't tell you why I've been getting back into that game. That game actually just turned 4 years old, believe it or not. I texted Spencer about that earlier today because that was kind of unbelievable. I remember on my 43-hour bus ride back from Idaho after a car that I was in broke down while I was road tripping, I was playing basically the entirety of the time that we were in the bus, I was playing Hearts of Iron 4. So that kind of got me into World of Warships, and then that subsequently got me into World of Tanks Valor, and then I've just kind of been moseying around inside of Madden 20. I played a little bit of the Face of the Franchise mode today. For whatever reason, I played one game and I was like, well, this is boring, and then I got off. So,
Speaking of Madden, I tagged you and Spencer in this on Twitter. I know they announced the new release reveal date for Madden 21. Is that next Monday, or when is that?
2 days from today that we're recording, so it should be Tuesday.
Okay, so the day after the podcast will go live. So next week, we'll talk about what's new in Madden, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see what's new.
Didn't they already reveal? Is it Lamar Jackson on the cover, or am I just crazy?
Yeah, Lamar Jackson. Okay.
Yeah, I think he revealed it himself on his Instagram or something like that. We covered it on the show. I just don't remember. It was one of his social media channels that he revealed it. What about you, Spencer? What have you been playing?
Like Gus said, I mean, World of Warships Legends. Gus played a little bit more than I have. A little bit of World of Tanks, too, and then some Warzone yesterday. So I didn't really get into a whole lot. I mean, I did play some Saints Row, still going through that. But the time I did play games this week was mostly playing World of Warships, or even a little bit of Warzone. So I still haven't touched Doom. I haven't touched Doom in like over a week. So I don't know. I'll hopefully beat that this summer, but I can't promise anything with the rate this is going. But I don't know. I just don't ever have a pool to play that game. I don't know. It's not that it's a bad game. Like, it looks and sounds and feels really good. It's just, I don't know, something about it, I don't feel a draw to play it. But yeah, I don't have a ton of updates. Just pretty much playing the same stuff.
Yeah. It's kind of been that kind of summer. I've been dipping into a lot of different things, but not really sticking with any one thing. I guess for me, the updates are I finished the Fallout 76 campaign from when the game launched, and I'm almost done with the stuff they added in Wastelanders. Still playing quite a bit of Fallout 76. I did start a playthrough of Fallout 3, but I'm not sure if I'm going to stick with that. I also completed Minecraft Dungeons, so I'm done with my first playthrough of that. I plan on probably playing at least once or twice through more. I'd like to get 100% of the achievements on there, but it may depend on if Gus and I find time to do it co-op, because I'm not sure that I'm going to play it through three times solo. So we'll see on that. So I felt pretty good because I completed two campaigns this week. And then No Man's Sky was finally added to Game Pass, which they had teased but not put a date on until last week. And so I downloaded that and I jumped into it. Man, I don't know really how to put my thoughts to No Man's Sky. I always wanted to try it, but I never felt compelled enough to spend money on it. And that has kind of been justified after now having played it, because it's kind of like a mixture of Minecraft and Fallout 76 and, space world like Mass Effect 1, where you're exploring planets. But it's just so much of mining and crafting. Like, it really feels like Minecraft, where you're going and finding a bunch of, the brick material or the rock material or the wood material to craft this thing that you need to craft this other thing. And then you got to trek across the map to find, only in Fallout 76, it's things like carbon, and you need carbon to make carbon nanotubes, and you need something else to make metal plating, and you got to repair the thrusters on your ship. And then it kind of takes you through a tutorial on your first planet, and once you get your ship up and running, you go to another nearby planet, and the next thing it teaches you how to do is like how to build shelter to avoid like radiation storms and stuff. And that's where I say it's kind of like Fallout 76, because there in Fallout 76 there's the nuke and there's rad storms, which are radiation storms, and the same as Fallout 76, it has a crafting mode where you build your little base, and that's how you create shelter from the storm. And Fallout 76 has a big base building component. So I don't know. It's another one of those games where the loop of gameplay is find this material, craft this thing, find more of a different material, craft this other thing. And it's definitely cool. I just don't see myself sinking a whole bunch of time into it. I'm glad I tried it. I can see why people could get addicted to it the same way Minecraft is addicting. I just personally don't really, I think, have time to invest in that right now. And so for that reason, I'll probably play a little bit more of it, but I don't intend to stick with it very much. But I can definitely tell how much the game has grown since the reports of what it was like when it first came out, and how, kind of the turnaround story of that game. So I probably won't say too much about that in future episodes, even if I play it again. But there's a lot of news to get to, so I don't want to delay it any further. And we're actually going to start with some non-Xbox news. The first major story is we finally had the PlayStation 5 reveal event this last week. It happened on June 11th, and it was mostly games. I think they showed something like somewhere between 25 and 35 individual games. A couple of them were from first party, like four or five, and then there was maybe about 50-50 split between the rest of them, between indie and third party. What's interesting is the way they portrayed the games in these trailers. A lot of them were made to look like exclusives, but a lot of them actually weren't and are coming to Xbox, or they have a timed exclusivity, and they're going to be on PlayStation for 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. We don't know how long exactly, but they will come to Xbox at some future date. So I'm going to pause there since my voice is already being taxed and say, I know, Spencer, you watched it, and Gus, I know you have some thoughts about some of these games. What games that you saw jumped out at you, whether they're coming to Xbox or not, what did you find was interesting?
I think it's pretty wild they let off with GTA 5, first of all, for a couple of reasons. One, that's going to be lasting now to a third generation. Obviously, Xbox 360, Xbox One, and then now clearly it's going to come to Series X. And second of all, that they would lead off with a game that's not, like Gran Turismo or Spider-Man or the Horizon sequel or something that's an actual like first party exclusive. But yeah, I mean, I think it's coming. Yeah, GTA 5 is coming to PS5 before it comes to Series X, which is fine. I guess I might buy it again for a third time, but I don't know. I mean, unless maybe they're using it as a test bed for GTA 6, I guess that could be the silver lining in this, but I mean, they're starting to get into like Skyrim territory here with all the re-releases and versions and the continuous updates. Yeah, I think it depends
on what extended and enhanced means, because that's what they had up on the screen is extended and enhanced. So,
yeah, I messaged and I said, I wonder if that means, which I know the answer to this is no, but it'd be cool if that meant that this multiplayer content or the GTA Online content was going to come to single player. But I think we all know that that's not going to happen because there's no real incentive for them to do that. But yeah, I mean, as far as...
It did also seem like they were going to release a standalone version of GTA Online that doesn't include the GTA 5. Did you get that out of there as well?
I mean, the trailer they showed was a single player trailer at first, so I think there's definitely going to be some form of GTA 5 playable on the PS5 and the Series X.
Well, no, I know they're going to do that, but it seemed like in some of the stories and the press releases afterwards that they were also intending to do a standalone GTA Online that would be available for free to PS5.
Subscribers. I think I do recall that. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, just like Warzone. I mean, you can, if you can release that for free, then I would do it, because that's clearly the cash cow for them. But
yeah. And I mean, they've kind of already done that on the Xbox side, because it's on Game Pass, and it will, if they do a smart delivery, it'll be available on Series X.
Or it was on Game Pass, because it was, remember, it was replaced. Oh, you're right.
Yeah. Yep, it did get swapped out.
Or not necessarily replaced, but you know, one Rockstar game for another. But I mean, yeah, GTA 5, fascinating that that's basically going to be 8 years now by the time it comes out on PS5. I saw a meme essentially where it was like, from 2013 to 2021 we got GTA 5 three times, and then from like 2001 to 2009 is when we got GTA 3, GTA Vice City, GTA San Andreas, and then 4, which I know things have changed a lot. I know things have changed a lot as far as how games are made, but still, it's pretty crazy to put in perspective that in either the same amount of time or 1 year less of time, we got 4 games back in the day to an hour. I mean, I guess you could argue we're getting 3 games, but I would say it's more like 1.5 games, you know, 2 times, maybe two games total. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what enhanced and expanded means. I mean, hey, if it looks really, really good, I mean, if it looks like a 2021 game when it comes out, then I guess, I mean, that's something to be excited for, but it's just funny that that's what they kind of opened with, was GTA 5.
Yeah, if I had to guess, I bet it's not going to be enhanced that much. Like, it'll probably run at 4K 60, but I doubt they're going to overhaul the graphics and make it look better. I bet it's going to be the same engine, the same graphical fidelity as the Xbox One version, which isn't that much of an upgrade from the Xbox 360 version. So for me, some of the games that jumped out at me, well, so I have a PS4 Pro, and some of my favorite games on my PS4 Pro were Spider-Man and Horizon. So I was really excited that they had a sequel to Spider-Man. Spider-Man Miles Morales was the first game they showed once they got past Grand Theft Auto 5. And it appears that that is going to be, there was a bunch of confusion in the news. Some sites were saying it was going to be basically a DLC expansion to Spider-Man, but then Sony PR put out a counterpoint to the previous clarification, saying, no, this is a standalone game, but it seems like it's going to be slightly smaller than Spider-Man and be more like Uncharted The Lost Legacy was one. What was the other standalone game they did? Oh, it was Infamous Last Light was a standalone game, spinoff of Infamous Second Son. So I really was excited about that. They said fall 2020, which was interesting. I'm assuming Spider-Man is going to be a release date game, but almost none of the other games they mentioned gave fall 2020 release dates. So I don't know how much of the stuff they showed is actually going to be there in the first month of launch. The other game I was excited about is the Horizon sequel, Horizon Forbidden West. But it was basically just a CGI trailer, and a little bit of it was in engine, but they didn't give a date or anything besides the title. So you have to assume that game isn't coming till 2021 at least. I don't know. What other games did you guys see?
I mean, I didn't see anything that like really caught my eye. The whole Spider-Man thing was kind of cool, but again, it's PlayStation only, so I don't really care to talk about PlayStation on an Xbox podcast. So nothing really popped out to me. And then the games that were coming to Series X 2 are like all the ones you kind of expected. So like NBA 2K21, obviously that's going to be multi-platform. Hitman 3, multi-platform. So yeah. I don't have like a whole lot to talk about on like the front of the games that they're putting out, because absolutely none of them jumped out to me.
So the ones, I guess, that were kind of notable, Resident Evil 8 Village is the name of that one. We had talked about a leak of that being a first-person game like Resident Evil 7. So that was confirmed. That's coming sometime next year. You just mentioned Hitman 3. So they're calling that the close of the Hitman trilogy. It's actually, it got dated January 2020. That, of course, will come to Xbox. The one that I was bummed about is Bethesda's game Deathloop, which is like a game where you die and you repeat as these two assassins that are kind of just juxtaposed against each other. It's being made by the team, I think, that did the third Dishonored game. It's, what's the name of the studio? Something Leon. It's escaping me. Anyway, it had some Dishonored elements, like being able to teleport, kind of like the daughter could in the second Dishonored game. And kind of the stealth gameplay felt like Dishonored, but set in a different world. I'm a little sad that that game is now a timed exclusive. So it's going to come to PS5 and it'll probably come to Xbox Series X, you know, a year or so down the road, if I had to guess. So that one kind of bummed me out. But yeah, I mean, the rest of the stuff isn't really a surprise. GTA 5, yeah. Resident Evil.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about Gran Turismo 7. It kind of looks like they're going for the Forza Horizon feel. Versus Motorsport, just based off of the little bit that I saw, where it was like a map and you could kind of select where you were going to go and there were characters and events on the map. I haven't played a Gran Turismo game since 4 or 5. I think 5 was the last one I played. And I think those games usually are more like the Motorsport series as far as comparing them to a Forza game. So I think that's kind of smart from their perspective to kind of go after Horizon, because obviously I think Horizon has been a lot more successful than Motorsport because it has a larger and wider appeal. But I think that's kind of like the stereotypical, like I'm sure Microsoft is going to show off the next Forza game when they still show off their stuff next month. But that's always kind of like the stereotypical next gen game to show is a racing game, because cars always kind of look good. No matter what. And the only other thing I think, yes, obviously the Spider-Man game looks cool. I wish we got those games. That's probably the biggest exclusive that I wish we had, other than maybe God of War. And then the Demon's Souls remake, that was kind of confusing, because when I saw that, I was like, wait a minute, wasn't there already a Demon's Souls game, or am I just going crazy? And it wasn't until way after the fact that it was like, oh, they defined that it was a remake, which I know most people obviously would have known when they first saw it, that it seemed like it would be a remake. Like they wouldn't just reuse Demon's Souls, the name, that soon after that game. Cause I think that game is only like 10 or 11 years old, but it still was, like you said, part of that kind of messaging that Sony had that was, I don't want to say disingenuous, but like just not very clear with a lot of these games and their status, whether they're exclusive or timed exclusive, or even with the Spider-Man game for a while, people thought it was a whole new game when it turns out that it was more of kind of like you were saying earlier, kind of like a, not necessarily a little bit bigger than an expansion, but smaller than a full on new game.
Yeah. A lot of people on Twitter seem to be kind of like up in arms about that. They're like, oh, I guess we didn't need E3 for us to not get the right information at a press conference or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, they played fast and loose with some of, like, these trailers came pretty quick, and there wasn't a lot of, occasionally they'd have a developer show up in between. But, you know, these shows always have, like, play fast and loose with what the word exclusive means and what world premiere means and all this stuff. And I saw somebody on Twitter say that Sony did a great job of making it look like everything on this was exclusive to PS5. And, you know, I've had friends that thought games were exclusive just because of the way they were marketed. So, I mean, this is a very effective way to get people to buy stuff on your platform is by confusing them to where they don't think it's available on another platform. But that's not just a PlayStation thing. Xbox does that too. I mean, third parties do that as well. But it's just, yeah. I mean, there was some good stuff here. Like I said, the two games I was excited about, Gran Turismo 7, I actually didn't catch what Spencer said about it being showing the map and stuff like that. I guess that just escaped me. I think I tuned out after I saw Cars because I was like, okay, Gran Turismo. I only really have room in my life for one racing game, and it's already Forza. So I kind of write off Need for Speed and Gran Turismo at this point. But they also showed Ratchet and Clank, which a lot of people were really impressed by because it's a dimension shifting game, and that basically you're using the power of the SSD to be able to like warp between worlds with instant loading. So that is kind of a cool example of what's possible in these new consoles that wasn't possible before, because you literally can warp to an entirely different level instantly and it just loads. Whereas on a previous generation, you would need some sort of door or crack in a ravine or something to hide the loading of that level behind the scenes. So that was kind of cool. Okay. So I guess the last thing we should talk about then is they ended by revealing the look of the console. So this is an audio podcast. It's hard to convey it if you haven't seen it. And then if you're a gamer, you probably have, but it kind of looks like a Wi-Fi router with a black middle and giant white fins on either side. And they're doing two versions, one with a disk drive, one without. What did you guys think of this design?
Ugly.
Yeah, it is definitely kind of ugly. I think it's kind of an acquired taste. It looks cool. I saw like a kind of a progression from the PS1 to the PS5, and it looks cool when you put it in the context of lining it up against the other four consoles. But I mean, it's ridiculous how big it is. Like, it's bigger than the original Xbox One. I think it's bigger than the original Xbox even too. So that's pretty crazy. I mean, like, some people are going to have a hard time fitting it in their entertainment centers or, you know, on their TV stands or whatever the case might be. But I mean, it's definitely a bold choice, I guess, if nothing else.
Yeah, I'd say bold was the word that struck me. About the size. So they didn't give us anything to know how big it was, but in the renders of it and the images they released, you can see the USB port and the disk drive on the front. So fans used the USB port as a scale, and they took all the other consoles and scaled them until they all had the USB drive the exact same size. And then you could see what the actual size of the console was. And it's a big boy. It's like an inch and a half taller than the original VCR shaped Xbox One from 2013. It's bigger than the original Xbox from 2001. It's bigger than, I think you can fit two PS4 Pros in the volume space of the PS5. I saw somebody break it down that the PS5 is, I believe, 40% bigger than the Xbox Series X by volume, but it's 30% less powerful. So the only thing I can think of is that they over-engineered it to make it super quiet because there was a lot of negative, feeling towards the PS4 and PS4 Pro for being really loud in the way that their fan system worked. So they could really, when they're running full power, they make a lot of noise. I will say the solution for the venting is really cool. They have the vents kind of hidden behind the fins. Also, the fins have a texture on them that if you get a magnifying glass and you look at it, the texture is not just bumps. It's actually the PlayStation logos. I think it's the X, the O, and the, you know, the square and the circle from the buttons, or it might just be the PlayStation logo. It's something like that.
That is really stupid. Cool, I just texture. Have to say that. That is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like the most gimmicky thing ever that they did that. The white fins just look so weird. So white just is not a PlayStation color. It's always been one. I mean, since I owned an Xbox 360 and that was white, it has always been white. Even though I guess technically it doesn't really matter because the Xbox One was also black, and then they also released a black version of the Xbox 360. But I don't know. It just looks weird for it to be white and black at the same time. I wish they would have picked one color. And I feel like it would have looked a lot better too. I know, Tim, you're a big fan of having it be like dark colors, so that way you can kind of like put it into your entertainment center without it being like seen. And that's something you just like can't do with this, because one, it's so big, and then two, it's just like the curve of it too is all like the curve of the white fins just looks really weird. It's just like it's like an over engineered hunk of junk, in my opinion, especially since it is apparently less powerful than the Series X. Sony really messed up. They were trying to go all out and make a statement, I guess.
I think I saw Jim Ryan in an interview say that this round they were going for something that you could... I heard Google say this when they designed the Google Home voice speaker. They're like, we want something that you can proudly put on your shelf and it not look hideous. And he said something similar, like, we wanted something that you could put out in the open and it be a design element in your room.
Or be like an art piece, like a set piece or something. That's like the stupidest thing that I've like ever heard in my opinion.
The two most off-putting things for me. So originally I was like, okay, I'll buy the one without the disc drive, because I really only buy the PlayStation consoles to play the exclusives, because I'm mostly an Xbox gamer. And I'll buy the one without the disc drive to play exclusives. But then when I found out how big it was, I was really off-put by that, because it's just really ginormous. And I already was a little bit bothered by it being white, because my entire entertainment center is dark, so it's going to stand out. And I'm not a huge fan of that. So at this point, depending on price, I may just hold off and not get one, which, okay, I'm an Xbox gamer primarily, but still, I would have purchased one if they had played it maybe a little safer. But it all depends on price, really, because I'm willing to pay a premium for my Series X because I want the best, most powerful system. And I like the minimalist box design of the Series X. I actually think it's really great. But the PlayStation 5, you know, if the disc-free version is a little bit cheaper, but then again, since I'm only using it for exclusives, if there's only Spider-Man at launch, you know, I'll hold off till the next Uncharted or Horizon or God of War or something to get one. There's always memes. So like the meme has been that the Xbox looks like a refrigerator, but it's kind of ironic now because the Series X is actually pretty small. And now we've got the PS5, which is ginormous. And there's memes. I've seen people comparing it to a Wi-Fi router. I think Spencer or Gus, one of you guys sent me a meme of it looking like a white and black Keurig coffee maker, which I thought was pretty funny. The one thing that is nice about it is it has a USB port on the front and a USB-C port. I don't know that that serves any purpose, but I do appreciate that a lot of stuff is going to USB-C as far as accessories. So having the option to do one or the other, then again, it's really easy just to get a USB cable that is USB-A to USB-C. Like, you know, the two ends are different. So I don't know that that really makes much difference. And you have to imagine USB-C ports are probably a little bit more expensive to make. So I don't know about that part of it either. I'm also not really sold on the new controller. I know we've already talked about this, but they're really leaning heavy into gimmicks. And I think we're well beyond that. Like the speaker and the touchpad on the PS4 were the worst parts about the controller. And now they've got both of those things again, plus a microphone, plus some sort of memory feeling sensory thing on the back, plus the touch sensitive triggers. I don't care about all that. And I have to assume it's going to drive up the price of the controller to be like $80 or $75. And that's the opposite of convenient.
But Tim, you'll be able to feel raindrops while you're playing.
That's the dumbest thing.
I'd rather just have somebody throw a bucket of water onto me.
I can't tell you how annoying it is to have the speaker on the controller, and it can't be muted in some games. It's infuriating, especially if you're trying to play. Like, I have two sleeping babies that I don't like. I play with headset so that it's quiet in the house, and if I play PS4. The controller is still making noise. It's not that loud, obviously, but it's still annoying. It's just, I don't understand why Nintendo and PlayStation insist on making these gimmicky things just to see what'll stick. And once you put it in there, you can't abandon it because there's games that depend on it, particularly the touchpad. If they want backwards compatibility, they now have to have that stupid touchpad on every PlayStation console for the next, you know, infinite generations. Okay, well, that's enough on PlayStation, unless you guys have any final thoughts.
Negative.
Okay, so our next story, the next big news of the week, is related to Destiny 2. They had their big reveal of their fall expansion. Now, I know neither of you guys is Destiny 2 people, so I guess I will kind of give my thoughts and try and be brief so we're not spending too much time on it. But what's interesting is they announced their next 3 years of expansions. They spent the most time on this year's expansion, which is called Beyond Light. It's coming out September 22nd. They're having a new damage type. So you have basically, there were three damage types in the game before. There was Void, which was purple. There was Arc, which is like electricity, which was blue. And there was Solar, which is fire, you know, kind of an orange. But well, they're adding a new one called Stasis. They're adding a new location, Europa, which is, what planet is that a moon of? Is that a moon of Venus, Saturn? I don't know.
Gus, this is your moment to shine.
I know. I'm literally leaning on Gus, and he's muted.
I think it's Jupiter. One of Jupiter's moons. It is Jupiter. Europa. Gus must have.
Yeah, that is correct.
Left
it is
left this. No. Oh, there he is.
I was seeing if you guys would be able to figure it out on your own. If you remembered anything from high school.
Yeah, right. You didn't know. You're waiting for us to tell you.
What? Whatever.
So they're adding Europa. And then they're also bringing the Cosmodrome back from Destiny 1 into Destiny 2 with all of its strikes and content. Well, not all of its content, but its strikes. And then they're bringing back the Vault of Glass raid, which was from Destiny 1. So they're, but on the flip side, they're now doing this new thing called the Destiny something Vault. I can't remember the full name of it, but they're basically going to take some content and take it out of the game and put it in the vault where players can't play it, to keep the size of the game down and to keep it manageable as far as playtesting their patches and things like that. So when the new expansion comes out, they're removing four planets and one like subplanet and basically all of the content from the first year of Destiny. So in removing those four planets, they're removing all the content that were on those four planets. Now, in my opinion, they're some of the worst planets, except for one of them I'm actually pretty fond of, but some of the other ones were like DLC planets. So they were a little bit smaller. So this is kind of controversial because they're taking content out of a game that people paid for, but they're going to have this thing where that content becomes free before it goes away. So there's a free-to-play version of Destiny, and currently all this content, or at least most of it, actually I think all of it, is available for free. So I don't know. It's this weird balance between what people paid for and what they didn't. But
so, yeah, that's really odd. Seems like a weird way to go about things.
Yeah, it is strange. But they basically said the game is getting too big, where the file sizes are going to be astronomical, and it creates a problem for them to manage because they have so much content in the game that it's impossible to successfully playtest the new expansions because there's too much ability for people to take something from the new expansion and go back and use it on old content to create exploits or things that were unintended, like bugs, and the game's just too big for them to playtest it. I don't know. I personally don't have a problem with it because the content they're taking out is the stuff I played at launch that is old and nobody plays it anymore. And they said through their analytics, they can see that people play it a lot less than the newer content. So from that perspective, I feel fine with it, but that's because I got my money's worth. I might feel differently if I were buying the $60 all-included version of Destiny today and that stuff were gone, you know, 6 months later. I don't know that there's a perfect solution here, though, because for Destiny to continue to grow, they only really have two options, which is to continue doing expansions and take some of the content out, which is what they're doing, or to just throw the game out, do Destiny 3, and you have to start all over building up your character and your gear. And with the old agreement with Activision, they would have put out Destiny 3 this year, but they're going a different direction. So this will be the fourth year of Destiny 2. It's getting another new expansion, and they announced new expansions for next year called The Witch Queen. And the year after, 2022, they'll have an expansion called Lightfall. So Destiny 2 is going to end up being a six-year game. That's just with the content we currently know about, and it could go beyond that.
Yeah. It makes sense. I think that's kind of the model, the live service model. Instead of having to try to invest in new infrastructure and trying to win new fans with a Destiny 3 and then a Destiny 4, you know, et cetera, whatever Activision have wanted to do. I mean, I think this is the path forward for them. And I think they're trying to make this game into, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example like Apex Legends, but that's only been around for a year or two. Fortnite, I guess, that's been around for several years now in its present form. But even I feel like you can compare it to any other like MMO game that's been around for ages on the computer space. So it's pretty cool. It's definitely different. I mean, I think it's kind of a brave new world for console gaming, especially now that we're going to be crossing over into another generation. This will be the kind of the first real test for if a PC style MMO game, or I shouldn't say not necessarily MMO, but like a PC style live service game can survive on a console when it's crossing generations.
Yeah, and I know this is not going to happen, but a part of me just wonders if they could take the content that is being removed and put in the vault and put it in like a separate game called like Destiny 2 Legacy, and people that purchase that content could still go play it in the Destiny 2 Legacy, but anything you earned in that wouldn't carry back to Destiny 2 proper. So if you just felt nostalgic and wanted to go play that stuff, you could, but it wouldn't affect the economy of the true Destiny 2. You'd just be playing it, you know, solo with the gear that was available at the time and things like that. But I know that that's a whole nother animal, because then they'd have to play test that game. They'd have to have a support team for that game. So that's not going to happen, but that would be like, I guess, the ideal scenario. And there's still problems with that, because then people, you know, are frustrated that they can't take the content from that game to the base game. But there are some other fan favorite things that are coming though. So they're finally doing transmogrification. So you'll be able to have your cosmetics separated from your gear that's affecting your stats. They've said this before, like with what they tried to do last year that didn't turn out so well with the, I forget what their term is for it, but they have like a way to put skins on, but only some things were available to be used as cosmetics. And so it didn't actually end up being full transmog. So hopefully this time it is full transmogrification. They're also said they're taking out FOMO, which is fear of missing out. So if you don't play Destiny 2 this year, all of the seasons were basically 12 or 16 weeks, however long they were. And after that period, the content was gone. It just disappeared. So if you didn't unlock anything that you wanted to get during that time, you lost your chance. And it created a problem for people that only play every so often that, you know, I saw somebody on Reddit once comment that, like, I only go in every 2 months and then I want to have a backlog of all the stuff that's come out in the last 2 months to play. Well, in this model, if his 2 months happened to align incorrectly, he might have missed out on most of a season because he only played at the beginning of one. And by the time he got back, the next season had already come out and he was locked out of the previous season. They also said they're going to be overhauling the quest log, which they improved it last season. It still needs some work, so I'm glad to see they're working on that. They also talked about next-gen support. So Destiny 2 is coming to next generation. It's going to be 4K, 60 frames per second, and you keep all the content that you have on Xbox One or PS4. So you can migrate within your console ecosystem. So for Xbox, they said they would support smart delivery. So all your stuff will just carry straight over to Xbox Series X. On PS4, they said they'll do something similar, but it's not called smart delivery. Basically, it'll just carry everything over to PS5. And then they're doing crossplay between PS4, PS5, and between Xbox One and Xbox Series X. The big reveal related to that was that they're working on full crossplay between consoles, so PS4 to Series X to PS5 to Xbox One, everybody being able to play together sometime next year, so in 2021. So all of this to wrap up a bow on it, I don't feel any better about where Destiny is. Like, they're saying a lot of good things, which they usually do every year around the time of the expansion. Like, free upgrades to next generation, 4K 60, transmogrification, taking FOMO out. Like, all the stuff is great. I don't even mind that they're taking some stuff out because I think the game was a little bloated. I just don't feel a reason to come back and reinvest because Destiny, the way the mission structure works now, it's just a game about grinding. And it takes a lot of effort to get a little bit of return. And there's just, we're in a heyday of good games. There is a good game, or at least a remaster of a previous good game, coming out every few weeks. And you really have to pick and choose, if you're not somebody that plays games for your job, what you have time to play. And I'm not sure that I have the time to commit to Destiny 2 anymore. So I've bought every Destiny expansion that has ever come out. And I think this might be the first time that I just don't feel the pull. I think I have other things that I'm going to want to play this fall, like Halo and Spider-Man, to be honest. So I just don't know if I have time for Destiny 2 anymore. I'll probably buy the expansion at some point, but it'll be because it went on sale, you know, in the spring or for Christmas or something like that, that I pick it up because it's on sale. And by then, since hopefully they've taken FOMO out, I'll just be able to catch up on all the content. And by then they'll have patched out any bugs and hopefully it'll be perfect. So I don't know. I know you guys aren't Destiny players. You guys have anything you want to add, or if not, I'll move on to the next story.
No, that's your bread and butter, Tim.
Not beyond what I've already said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I used to be the most impassioned Destiny fan there was, but it's just, I got burnt out. I mean, who wouldn't after 6 years or 7 years, however long it's been, of the same kind of rut. Okay, well, moving on and not moving very far. Several job listings were dug up by Windows Central and Video Game Chronicle. I saw stories on both those sites about Bungie's next game. And the only real teases we got were that their new IP is going to be something that is a RPG. And it will be loot-based. And it will be, the terms that were listed were comedic and whimsical. So the only thing I could think of that's a comedic loot RPG was Borderlands. But I mean, obviously there's a lot of ways you could go with that. The real question is, what is it going to be as far as setting? Because Destiny and Halo were both, you know, space operas set in alien worlds and interesting places and space. And you have to imagine that they're going to probably separate themselves from that and do something new.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely be compelled to play a Bungie take on a Borderlands game. Just because I've always said that I've loved the gameplay in Destiny. I just couldn't get into the meta of it. But I think a game that's built similarly to Borderlands, but with kind of Bungie's hallmark in gameplay and story building and world building and story telling and all that, I think I'd be really interested in that, actually, definitely more so than Borderlands. Like, Borderlands keeps being on sale for like $15 or less, and I'm just, Borderlands 3, and I just, yeah, no desire to pick it up even at $15. But a game like that with Destiny's paint scheme on it, I would be interested.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard. I mean, you could make a case that Bungie makes the best feeling first-person shooters on the market. Like, no matter what they screw up or get right, the gunplay always feels fantastic. And, I mean, what if they gave you a take on a medieval RPG? What if it was a competitor to Skyrim, only with a more comedic tone? I mean, there's so many cool things that they could do just taking the talent that there is at Bungie and putting it to work on something new.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It could be cool. I don't know about medieval. That doesn't seem like that would be their bread and butter. It seems like that would be a little bit of work for them. Plus, yeah, I mean, a loot RPG, I guess you could make that work with a medieval or a fantasy setting, but like you said, it almost seems more like it would be a Borderlands type competitor.
Yeah, and the reason I went medieval with my comment is in one of the job listings, they mentioned like necromancers and swords, but a part of the way it's written makes me think that it might just be giving examples of the kind of content that they need somebody to be able to work on, not the actual setting of the game that they're working on. Because they also mentioned something about the like relationship to loot and reward, and it was almost like giving an example and not actually like revealing a project.
I'm surprised that Bungie is even still relevant outside of Destiny, to be quite honest.
Well, I mean, they haven't done anything. They went from Halo Reach to Destiny 1 and Destiny 1 to Destiny 2. And Destiny has now been, I mean, Destiny has been on the market since 2013 or 2014. So let's say 7 years. And I believe it was being worked on for like 5 years before that. So there's been somebody at Bungie working on Destiny for at least 11 or 12 years.
Right. But now it's like, obviously, Bungie isn't really attached to Halo anymore, but with how like poorly the last couple Halos have been received, you almost feel like it, like by extension, it tarnishes Bungie's name. At least I do.
You know, speaking of Halo, you know, a long time ago when we were just starting the podcast, they put out those teasers of the new design of Master Chief. You guys remember that, where they showed how the helmet was like a combination of Halo 3 mixed with Halo 4?
Was that for 5? That was for Guardians, right?
No, that was for Infinite. That's for the upcoming.
Man, it seems like it's just been so long ago now that we've just been waiting without hearing anything.
Well, I mean, it has been 3 years, but the reason I bring it up is we totally didn't talk about this when it happened, but last year at E3, when they showed the trailer where the guy finds Master Chief in his armor, you know, and he hooks him up to the ship's power to bring him, like, to wake him up. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
There's a moment in that trailer where the camera pans out to reveal the Mjolnir armor, and we see the full Mjolnir. The whole, what is it, Kat Denning says in Thor? We see the full reveal of the new design, and we never talked about that on the show. And we don't have to do it now, but I challenge you to go back and look at it, because it is interesting to reflect on. I was never a huge fan of the armor in Halo 4 and 5. So I really love how much they've gone back to Halo 3, but brought it forward into modern times.
343, I think they just put out a something on their Facebook. It was like some more concept art or whatever of the Master Chief.
That wasn't actually
in his armor. It wasn't them.
I saw that too. It wasn't actually them. It was like a fan. It was called 343 Industries, but they don't actually, their account is just Halo. It's not even that.
Yeah.
It's just called Halo.
Still, I saw it and it was just like, he was like fat. Not really fat, but he was just like thick. And I was like, okay, well, I guess we'll see.
Well, and if you think about it, we're potentially less than a month away from finding out what Halo Infinite is.
They're going to stealth drop it onto Game Pass and just not say anything to anybody. Can you imagine if they did that?
That would be such a mistake.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is like, does Halo, I mean, obviously you guys are going to disagree with me. I was like, does Halo even really still like draw that much of a crowd anymore? Yeah, obviously it's like, it's still going to be a lot of people playing it, but like, I feel like gone are the days of like Halo 3 and Halo 2, where it was like huge, especially with how bad 4 and 5 were, or like I said, just not, they just weren't very well received. It's like, I mean, most people, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who will play it, but it just doesn't have the same kind of draw anymore to me. Again, like I said a little bit earlier with just Bungie in general, but it's like, I don't know. It seems like it's like something of a relic. Almost.
What does Bungie have to do with
Xbox
it?
Xbox Pass. Well, they don't have anything to do. I'm just saying, like, Bungie.
Well, why is their reputation tarnished?
Because 343, I know they aren't attached to Bungie anymore, but Halo 4 and 5 have been bad, or at least not that great. And so, by extension, because Bungie is still known as, like, Halo, for the most part, like, people are like, oh, well, obviously, they don't have anything to do with each other, but I can still see how people might make the connection between the two and be like, oh, well, I just don't really care much for either one anymore. So
you're saying because 4 and 5 weren't as good, then people who aren't as educated think Bungie is still associated?
And possibly.
They're like, oh, Bungie isn't as good anymore?
Or they just like, maybe they're like, maybe it's like a like a bad breakup, I guess. Well, I think like, if anything, people it makes don't like Bungie now either, because Bungie screwed us for not doing Halo anymore.
If anything, it makes Bungie look better because the last good Halo game was made by Bungie.
Well, yeah, but then look at all the stuff with Destiny. I mean, no but offense. I mean, obviously Destiny sold like, really well, but yeah, it's like
they've had problems, but I would say that Destiny 1 and 2 were better than Halo 4 and 5.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, so, I would agree with that. I'm just saying that I could see how people could make the connection that Bungie, they see Bungie as more of like a relic, like I said, rather than
I don't know about
obviously
that.
Obviously, they're making like gangbuster games like Halo 3 that are huge or like a worldwide phenomenon. I'm not saying Destiny wasn't a worldwide phenomenon, but it wasn't the same level as Halo 3 or even really Halo Reach, in my opinion. You can say that I'm wrong about that all you want, but I just...
Yeah, I think you're wrong about that.
I just feel like Halo just doesn't really... I don't know. It doesn't really... I mean, I like playing Halo, but it's like... I don't know. It just doesn't really seem to do it for me anymore because it's like I've almost like moved on from Halo. Maybe I say that because I haven't had anything new that's been good. And so now I'm just kind of ready to just hang it up on the Halo front and just like stick to playing Master Chief Collection whenever I want.
Well, I think it's what you're feeling is a symptom of two things. One, back in the heyday of Halo, so when Halo 3 and Reach were on the 360, if you owned an Xbox 360, you probably were playing Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, and Halo 3. And you and your friends were playing that multiplayer basically all the time. But that changed over time because now, if you're a gamer, you're more likely to have a PS4 and be playing Fortnite or Call of Duty Modern Warfare than you are to be playing Halo. And so the two things factoring in are Battle Royales and their explosive, place, you know, Apex Legends, Fortnite, PUBG. All of those are a lot more common than Halo multiplayer, partially because there hasn't been a Halo game in 3 years.
Or and two, one,
the PS4 outsold the Xbox 2-1 or 3-1, I think. And for that reason alone, a lot of the conversation shifted away from Xbox and Halo. And the Series X is a real opportunity, I think, there because it's the more powerful machine. And potentially, I think right now Xbox is set up to have better launch games because it seems like we've been really thin on games the last few years as they've built up studios. And Phil almost seems to have built a dam knowing that they're going to have big games going into the next generation. And I mean, at some point he knew they had lost the Xbox One generation and they kept fighting and building services. But even if the Series X launches just with Halo Infinite and they're going up against Spider-Man, that's a pretty good fight, especially if Spider-Man is only a expansion. And that's the only game we know of so far. But think about what the PS4 launched with. It had Killzone. And I mean, that was the major first party.
Did
launch
it not have Uncharted 4?
No, that was 2 or 3 years after launch. It had a Knack, but Xbox didn't really have much on their side. They had the whatever that Roman game
was. Oh, I remember
was.
That. Yeah.
Rise, Son of Rome.
Yeah, Rise, Son of Rome, and the Dead Rising. So a lot of third party exclusives. But this generation could be the exact inverse. I mean, Xbox launching with Halo and Halo being a part of the conversation. But that is, again, a symptom of Xbox One being an unpopular system and Halo 5 being a little bit of a letdown. And so all of that leads to the conversation shifting away from Halo as powerhouse in first-person shooters.
The feelings that I had towards Halo 4 and 5, maybe they've festered. The wounds have festered, and now I'm just like, Halo dumb. Halo bad. Move on.
Well,
so but I don't know.
I don't think you're totally wrong, but I do think you're a little maybe embittered because of where it's been recently.
I just want good Halo game.
Hope.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, well, story number 4. AT&T is rumored to be looking for a seller for WB Interactive. So
looking to sell? Like, do they own it or they're looking to buy it?
Yes, they acquired through their recent merger, they acquired WB Interactive with part of their merger with WB and some of the other parent companies.
Give it to Microsoft.
because of that merger, they also were saddled with, I think I heard, $200 billion worth of debt. So their stockholders are pushing them to sell some of the non-essentials to pay off some of that debt. So the current rumored asking price for WB Interactive is $4 billion, which I believe is the same price that Disney bought Star Wars for. And that would include things like Mortal Kombat and the studio NetherRealms, Rocksteady Studio, WB Montreal.
It would include getting all the superhero, DC superhero games.
Well, that's the problem, though, is it wouldn't include the licenses for those games for the DC superheroes. But people were theorizing that if you're buying studios that have exclusively worked on WB properties like Harry Potter, Batman, the Injustice games, that whoever the new purchaser is, the purchase agreement would probably include some sort of licensing agreement that allowed them to make those games for the next 10, 20 years, whatever that deal is. I think you're absolutely right. It would be amazing to have Xbox pick this up. Imagine if Mortal Kombat was an Xbox exclusive. That would be huge.
Yeah.
But I think it's more likely, the rumor right now is that the bidders are the worst of the worst. AT&T, Take-Two, and EA.
EA cannot get their hands on this.
Yeah.
I'll die. I'll sit in the front of a tank to make sure that EA doesn't blow something like Mortal Kombat up.
I don't know if Activision's any better.
I mean, Activision would be fine. Because the thing is, Activision has experience with superhero games. I mean, I guess maybe they don't superhero games. They did Marvel Ultimate Alliance, but they could do a DC version of that, I guess, if they really wanted to.
The good news is you're getting the studios that work on these games, not necessarily the properties.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's some really talented studios here. I mean, NetherRealm is basically the definitive fighting game champion.
Yep.
Rocksteady.
Rocksteady's huge with the Batman
Rocksteady's games. Huge, and they're working on some new IP. And then WB Montreal is already teasing their next Batman game.
Right.
The problem is that price tag of $4 billion, I mean, Microsoft could certainly afford it, but that's a lot of money for Phil Spencer to go to, Satya Nadella and
Bill Gates.
Hey, I want $4 billion to buy. But it would be a quick way to get at least 4, 5, 6 more studios in one quick, jump. And
swing of the axe.
And honestly, they don't have those types of games in the portfolio. We haven't had a fighting game since Killer Instinct. We haven't had a third-person action game maybe since The Last Dead Rising, as far as an exclusive. And these wouldn't have to be exclusives. They could keep doing them like Minecraft and say, you know what, we're going to let Batman be on all platforms until that studio is done making Batman games. But it still would be a solid investment for the future.
Batman could be the Microsoft's answer to Sony having Spider-Man.
Oh, that would actually be a really interesting counter.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Because Batman's like the only other superhero, that is like huge. I guess not really huge, but that has had successful games, like sequentially like successful. Like pretty much every single Batman game that's come out has been like well received.
Yeah, well, and even just in pop culture, Batman and Spider-Man are two of the most powerful figures from comic books.
Agreed.
I mean, even though Superman is
in terms of actual well-known power.
Yeah, he's a well-known character, but he doesn't sell as well as Batman does in a lot of ways.
Otherwise, all the Superman movies would be good and all the Batman movies would just be themselves. But alas.
Yeah. Well, and it plays out in the movies. There's been more Spider-Man and Batman reboots than anything because those movies sell because those characters are popular.
Yep.
Okay, so speaking of EA, the next story, we got a couple months ago, we talked about a leak on the PlayStation Store for something called Star Wars Project Maverick, and there was like one screenshot with like some TIE fighters and a couple other things. Well, there was another leak, this time from the Microsoft Store, and we got the official title, Star Wars Squadrons. And then a few hours later, we got the official confirmation from EA that Star Wars Squadrons will be revealed this coming Monday, so the day this podcast goes live. They're going to reveal it on Twitter and social media and YouTube, the official trailer. The rumor is that it is a vehicle, dogfighting game, where you play as TIE fighters or X-Wings. and that is mostly multiplayer, but that there is a short campaign component of 4 to 6 hours. So basically, it sounds like to me like something like Battlefront 2 with a short campaign, but mostly focused on multiplayer, but vehicles only. What do you guys think of this? I've included a couple of the art pieces in our show notes for you guys to look at, but I know you've already seen a lot of stuff on social media as well.
Don't care. the flying or like the space battles from Star Wars Battlefront 2 are like the least engaging thing of the least engaging part of that game, which is saying a lot. But
well, yeah, do you not have any attachment to like Rogue Squadron or any of the classic?
I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, I don't know. It depends how they're gonna do this, because it can't be like Star Wars Battlefront 2's 2017's like space assault. It can't be like that, because it just wasn't good.
Yeah, right. I mean, I hopefully it's a whole new game. I mean, I guess if they use the same engine or similar, that's fine, I guess. But yeah, I'm with Gus. Like, I played approximately 5 rounds of space battles in Star Wars Battlefront 2, and they just aren't really fun. And they're just, I don't know. It's been a long time since there's been a good aerial combat game. I mean, Ace Combat 7 is fine, but yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of with Gus on this. Like, it's a cool, and yeah, it'd be nice if it was like Rogue Squadron, but unfortunately, because of a whole host of other issues related to Star Wars right now that we won't get into, there's just no chance that it'll be as engaging or as intriguing. I mean, 4 to 6 hour campaign could be fine if there was something that we could care about, but I don't know. I mean, the thing that was cool about Rogue Squadron in those games was you had characters already established going into those games that you could care about that were pilots, or, I mean, I know Luke is in them too, and obviously other characters that you're familiar with and that you like are involved. And that's just, I'm not going to get any further into that, but that's just not a thing in Star Wars right now. So I'm excited. I'm definitely excited to see tomorrow on the 16th or the 15th what's going on here, but I don't have high hopes.
Yeah, it's hard to be excited, I guess, a little bit. Like, I initially, like, the artwork looks cool, but you're right, the Hero Assault or whatever the what's it called? TIE Fighter, I can't even remember. The dogfighting mode in Battlefront 2 is a little tacked on, and it can kind of just feel like controlled chaos where there's just ships going everywhere and it's not really clear what your objective is. And it's
basically, that's basically what it is. Just a bunch of people flying around with like AI as well, because the problem is that like, it's just like Battlefield 3 or even Battlefield 4 for that matter, where it's like the people, like there's a very, very like big gap between being good at flying and shooting other people down, like other real players, and like just being like middle of the road or just not very good. Like you'll basically just get smoked by anybody who's like even like halfway decent. Well, not even really halfway decent, but who's like, if they played a lot, they're just going to destroy you. And that was one thing I never really cared much for, because it's like, you can tell who plays it and who a lot and who doesn't. I feel like that, it's like that with any flight simulator game as well. And so I was never able to really get into Space Assault on Battlefront 2, because then they added AI teammates, so that way people could actually feel good and shoot stuff down. But I don't know. Obviously, space battles are a huge part of Star Wars, but I would have to see what it is that they're trying to do with the game before I even get like remotely excited.
Well, since they're revealing it now, it's probably going to be a cross-generational game for PS4, PS5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X. And since they're going to reveal it tomorrow, why don't we just put a pin in it for now, and we'll talk about this next week once we know more.
Sounds good to me.
But let's stay in the EA family, and this one should be more up your guys' alley. So the rumor currently is that Battlefield 6 is going back to a modern-day setting like Battlefield 3 and 4. Accompanying that rumor, though, is another rumor that Battlefield 3 is getting remastered, and that it's been in the works for several years, and that it's going to release alongside Battlefield 6. my quick take on this before I get the take from the experts in Battlefield, which is you guys, why wouldn't you do Battlefield 3 this year when you don't have a first-person shooter coming out, and then do the big Battlefield 6 next year? To release these alongside each other all but guarantees they're not going to have multiplayer for Battlefield 3 because they wouldn't want it to compete with Battlefield 6. And if it does have multiplayer, then you're making the mistake of doing what you did with Battlefield 1 and Titanfall 2 of having Battlefield 3 and Battlefield 6 compete with each other. So I don't know. Again, it's a rumor, so we could be totally off here from what the sources have told. I picked these stories up on Games Radar and Video Game Chronicle. But what do you guys think about the setting and the timing of release of these games?
I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I'm cool with them going back to the modern day setting. I feel like they kind of screwed the pooch with the last couple games. Obviously, there was a huge snafu by Battlefield 5. And then Battlefield 1 was all right, but I don't know. It was like a bold, parade into World War One, which has always been like the one like untouched area, the one untouched area of like war history is World War One, and you can just kind of tell it just doesn't really fit with how first person shooters are meant to be played, in my opinion, or how they could be played. It would have to be World War One only really fits in like those like PC like simulators like Arma or like hyper realistic takes on how war was in that particular time period. So I'm happy with them going back to the modern day setting. I feel like that's always kind of been Battlefield's thing. Anyways, I mean they've had good like ventures into time pieces. Obviously Battlefield 1942 is really good, and Battlefield Bad Company 2 Vietnam was a really good expansion that went into Vietnam, in my opinion at least. So I'm cool with them going back to that. Did you hit on the Battlefield 3 remaster, right? Or have we not touched that? I thought I heard you talk
about
it.
Yeah, I'm actually really curious what you say about that, Gus, because you had previously said that was like your game of the generation.
It is. When it comes to first-person shooters and overall, like, there was, there was so much, like, hype. And it was, like, one of the few games where it actually lived up to the hype, in my opinion. Because I remember all of, like, the TV spots. Like, I remember they had, like, the guys who did the, Rocket Jump, I think was what they were called. Like, they were, like, the YouTube CGI guys that were in it. I don't know why I remember that, but I remember like being in high school, like in the cafeteria and seeing that commercial come on. I was like, heck yeah. So I'm cool with it being remastered. I'll definitely get it.
Will it ruin it for you if it's just the campaign and not multiplayer?
Probably. Is that what they were saying? I didn't really read too much into it.
No, there was no details given, but yeah. I can't imagine if it's release.
If it's just campaign, yeah, obviously I won't be pleased. So I'll be like, well, what's the point then? I mean, because Battlefield 3's campaign was like, it was interesting,
fine,
but it was also kind of like, I just don't really ever really
forgettable.
Think about it. Yeah, well, yeah.
Battlefield 3. I wouldn't say it's like completely forgettable, but I was just
like, yeah, I was just like, well. It just wasn't memorable, like. But I could probably. I mean, I can recall like going, you being in Paris, like a nuke going off in Paris. But for the most part, it was just kind of like there, just to be there. So if it was just campaign, I feel like that would be really stupid.
Yeah, like I said, I feel like it would be better if they released the full Battlefield 3 remastered this year and Battlefield 6 next year. Yeah. They've already confirmed that Battlefield 6 is next financial year, or at the very least, put out Battlefield 3 remastered next summer. That way you have 6 months of like goodwill with the Battlefield franchise leading up to the release of Battlefield 6.
I hope
if they release these near each other, I think that's a mistake.
I do hope that if they go all in with the remaster and it's all good to go, I do hope that they make they fix the matchmaking in the servers to support like 48 like man servers, because I remember it was only 32 on 360, And I remember if you played Armored Kill on just 360, like it was, the maps were so huge that it's like you could go an entire game without like seeing people. Spencer, I feel like you probably remember that too. Like the Armored Kill maps were just too big for how few people were in the game. And then obviously
I remember that they
like upscaled all the maps to be like the same size as Armored Kill and like made them 60 man servers or 60 person servers on Battlefield 4. And that kind of made more sense. So I hope they keep the size, because even still, there were some of the maps that were like kind of big, even for just like 30 people, or was either 30 or 32. I think it's 32. So I feel like if they bump that up to support 48 people in a game, I feel like that would be really cool. So
I almost feel like Battlefield 4 was too big, though, a lot of the time.
Yeah, even Battlefield 4 was kind of overwhelming sometimes, because it's like I remember even on like the map where. Like the Shanghai map where like the skyscraper can fall over into the bay. Like I was there would be times where I'm just like running around. So, but the Battlefield 3 maps are
not finding anybody.
4. Yeah, exactly. So I feel like just upping it to have support 48 people on a server will do a lot for that. I think it'll be a lot better.
Well, Tim, you didn't mention this. Part of the maybe you moved it to the quick hits. I don't know, but part of the reason why they, are not part of the reason, but yeah, the Mass Effect thing. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but the rumor is the Mass Effect remaster is going to be out this fall. That's why the Battlefield 3 remaster is getting bumped. But I feel like they could just launch them alongside each other and wouldn't cannibalize any sales.
Yeah, I was gonna say I would agree with that wholeheartedly with Spencer on that, because those are my. Like nostalgia pieces are Mass Effect and Battlefield 3. That's like my senior year of high school. And I'd be very excited if they both kind of came out at the same time. I'd basically just be inserting myself into a time capsule back to 2013.
I mean, you're pretty set to have a good year then, because right. At least at some point in the next 12 months, you're going to get, if the rumors are true, Battlefield 3 remastered, Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 remastered. Yeah, I mean, Gus, we're going to have to like revive you from lack of sleep.
Yeah.
Because you're just going to be playing.
Basically.
I saw you the other day and we were laughing because you're currently playing through the hardest difficulty, I think, playthrough. Or what is it? The perfect something of Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3.
Oh,
and
now you're
gonna have to start over to replay it on the
remaster. Yeah, I had to. Well, yeah, we did talk about that. I haven't touched it in a while. It's the disc is currently sitting on top of my 1X right next to me. But yeah, if it gets remastered, then I don't know. It just depends how they do it. Like I told you, and we can just mention it really quickly. I feel like they should do it in the same way that they did the Mafia trilogy. So remake the first game so that it's actually playable and I don't want to kill myself every single time I play through it, and try to make it more similar to Mass Effect 2 and 3 so like the continuity is still there, and then you could just remaster 2 and make some updates to Mass Effect 3. I feel like that would be more than enough to kind of get me back in it. So, but they need to remake Mass Effect 1. It's just it's old and it hasn't aged well. Gameplay wise, all of the obviously all of like the sound bites, like the dialogue options and people talking, like those are always just going to be iconic to me. But they have to update the actual like gameplay system. Even if they made it similar to like Andromeda in all three games, that would also be kind of interesting. They probably won't, but. Even if they did that for just Mass Effect 1 and kind of made the engines more similar to Andromeda's combat system, that would be really cool. But that's pretty much all I have to say on that until they release more information on it, because it's EA, so can't hold my breath, unfortunately.
Well, the good news is you don't have long to wait, because this Thursday, June 18th, is EA Play, and we're going to get reveals of basically all their plans for the rest of the year. So we should know in four days exactly what is going on with Battlefield.
Seems like a lot of stuff's getting revealed this week coming up.
Yeah, it's like E3 week 2.0 because stuff got delayed. And I think we're also getting the stream this week for Cyberpunk 2077. Yeah. I think their Nightwire is
offhand. It just E3 is just it basically has been like exposed as like completely unnecessary, in my opinion. Do not at me. I don't think we ever will ever need E3 ever again, because I feel like people could just, like, social media is so far reaching now that you can just throw stuff out on, like, all your social media and maybe throw, like, together some ad campaigns. Like, you don't need people to just kind of go somewhere. I feel like more and more people are cool staying inside, and if they want to, they can buy merch from these people.
Yeah, so. I think the biggest benefit of not having E3 this year is that we are able to spread out everything. Like, not everybody is going on the same 2 or 3 day period. Like, for example, this week we had Destiny and we had PlayStation and we had a lot of indie stuff. And then next week we have EA and we have Cyberpunk. And I think there's some stuff even the week after that. And then we don't have Xbox again until July. And there's one other one in July. So it's like, it's almost like 6 weeks of news where everybody has their time to shine. And rather than having a 2-hour episode of Multiform where we break down all the news of one big E3 week, we have, you know, different topics each week. Like, this week we mostly focused on PS5 and Destiny 2 with some other smaller stories, whereas next week it'll be more about all the EA news. And by the way, it's really weird that EA is putting out a trailer for that Star Wars game on Monday when EA Play is 3 days later. Like, unless it's just a really basic teaser, why wouldn't you just wait and have this game be surprise revealed on Thursday as a part of your big show?
Yeah, it's probably just like strange. A CGI, like, 30-second TV spot or something like that. And that will reveal absolutely zero information about what exactly is going to be going on. It's just going to be it's going to be a TIE fighter dog fighting the next wing, and that's it. And then we're just going to be sad. And it ends with,
join us for EA Play this Thursday for full details.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, so I dropped into a few of these E3 replacement streams. I will say, like we kind of thought would happen, PlayStation had like millions of viewers, obviously, but some of these other ones like GameSpot and Guerrilla Interactive and IGN, they did not have huge numbers from what I saw. And to be honest, the reveals were smaller. Like, most of the reveals that the media websites were able to get are AA and AAA games. I mean, you're not getting Cyberpunk to reveal their new trailer on IGN.com because they can do that at the Xbox show or the PlayStation show or their own show, because they're big enough to command their own show. So is Star Wars. So is Tony Hawk, even got his own thing with Jeff Keighley. So I don't know. That one downside to all of this was everybody tried to get their own piece of the pie from the media perspective. And it kind of felt like almost desperation of everybody just trying to fill the void of content. And it almost, now we had too much content and not a lot of it was of value. Like, IGN's feed is constantly filled with indie games that, you know, some are interesting, but also a lot of them are just noise. And there is something to be said for getting some publicity for indie games and making sure the best stuff rises to the top. But the amount of, I guess, promotion that is going to that rather than some of the stuff that is maybe more mainstream and will appeal to a broader audience is just, I guess, a little different than previous years. Not good or bad, just different is what I'm saying. So I'm starting to lose my voice, but we do have a couple quick hits in the show.
Want me to do them for you, Tim?
Yeah, you know what? You usually don't do the quick hits, so why don't you take it?
All right. So the first one, this is interesting. Halo Master Chief Collection is getting ODST's Firefight later this summer. So I believe that will complete the Master Chief Collection with all legacy content. That's pretty neat. I mean, technically ODST isn't a Master Chief game, but, you know, it's a 360 Halo game, which is really what the Master Chief Collection is all about. I have some fond memories of playing Firefight, but it was kind of, I didn't have, actually, not all my friends back in the day got ODST, so I didn't play a whole lot of it. I remember trying to get a specific achievement in Firefight that I never got on 360. That was like reaching a certain score level on one of the maps, but that's neither here nor there. That's exciting. The next one, Need for Speed Heat, is the first EA game to get crossplay. And also, the next Need for Speed game is confirmed to be in development at Criterion. So there you go. Need for Speed getting a lot of support. That's kind of nice, I guess. I mean, Need for Speed Heat is another one of those games that I slotted onto my my wish list, in air quotes, but that was only just to see the price drop, not necessarily to buy it. Next, the Lockhart name appears in Code for Windows. So if you'll recall, Lockhart was the rumored or teased all digital Xbox Series X variant, you know, Xbox Series S perhaps. But nothing is yet announced. And I know some people were teasing this week on Twitter that Sony revealed the Lockhart before Microsoft did, because they revealed a PS5 without a disk drive before Xbox revealed a Series X without a disk drive. So there you go. There's more. Actually, there's a screenshot here I'm just now seeing, and it's in the same line as Xbox Durango, Xbox Scorpio, and Xbox Anaconda, which, if you'll recall, were all code names for various iterations of the Xbox over the last decade or so. So maybe that's another reason why it could be the long-rumored discless Series X. Who knows? Next, Final Fantasy 13 Remake. Here you go, Tim. This one, it says, you're excited about.
You got that one wrong.
Oh, hold on, pause. Time out. No, time out, time out. This is like the snowboarding game, 13.
No.
No, it's not.
click into Wikipedia.
Oh, 13, okay.
13 was a cel-shaded
first-person
shooter that came out in 2003. And the reason I was excited, so this is a complete remake of the game 13, and it's stylized as XIII. This was a really cool first-person shooter that came out in 2003 for PS2, Xbox, and GameCube, and a few others. I had it on PS2. And I can't remember if I beat it and traded it in at GameStop or what, but I actually found out about it because it was featured that year, I think, in Game Informer's top 50 games of the year. And so I picked it up used or something like that. And if they get the price right on this, this is a really, really cool game to be remade from a bygone era. And I could see it being very cool to be updated. If this is $20, it would be perfect at that price point. Especially, I don't know if it'll have multiplayer. I can't remember if it had multiplayer in the original. It's been 17 years since I played this game. But I would really love to revisit this. It's just all going to be about price and how much time I have. November 10th is a really, really rough release date for this game, because it's going to be competing with every other first-person shooter that comes out this fall. But again, if it's $20 or $30, I probably would definitely be interested. If it's $40 or $60, I'm out. There's not enough there to justify a remake at that price point. But that's what I keep saying about these remakes and remasters. It's all about the value proposition. How much of a remake or remaster is it, and how much is the price? And if it's not that much improved and it's $60, obviously that doesn't work out. If it's a lot improved and the price is slightly less, like Tony Hawk 1 and 2, then the value proposition shakes out much better. So
yeah,
Fantasy 13.
Well, I was thinking, that's what I thought originally, yes. And then I thought it was the SSX game, like that series, like the snowboarding and motocross games that EA Sports used to make.
SSX 3 or something.
Yeah, that's what I was.
XIII.
Yeah, that's where my brain was going. I don't know why. I had never heard of the 13 games, so that's probably why. So you'll forgive me in that error. But anyways, so
take us home with Game Pass.
Yeah, last but not least, games coming to Game Pass. I think you put these in alphabetical order, Tim, not release order. But June 11th, we have Dungeon of the Endless on console and PC. Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 and 2.5 Remix, also on June 11th. And the same day, Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue. So if you really like Kingdom Hearts, a lot of the games are now going to be on Game Pass as of the time you're hearing this, because it's past June 11th. Also, as Tim alluded to earlier, No Man's Sky was added last week. And then DLC for eFootball PES 2020 Euros and The Elder Scrolls Online Morrowind, which is, I think, the expansion for The Elder Scrolls Online in, I want to say, 2018, maybe? I can't remember. But that's pretty cool to see that actually getting added. Because I know that was a pretty large, I think the current most recent one is the Skyrim expansion, but I think the Morrowind one was the previous one before Skyrim that was pretty large. So that's cool to see. And then
also cool to see them adding DLC to Game Pass. Yeah. Hopefully that's a thing of the future.
Yeah, that would be kind of neat. Also this week on the 16th, you can pre-install Grounded, which is an Xbox game preview game, also on PC. And then on June 18th, we have The Bard's Tale ARPG, which I was looking into that and I was kind of confused because I didn't realize that there was like yet another The Bard's Tale game, but there's that. And then also on the 18th, the Witcher Tales Thronebreaker, the standalone Gwent game that Tem and I both have played to certain extents, also being added June 18th. So there you go. I think The Witcher 3 is still on Game Pass, so everything but The Witcher 2 on that's on Xbox is on Game Pass, so no excuses for those of you not playing it. Although I will say Thronebreaker was probably the hardest form of Gwent, but it's an interesting game. It's a cool story. I definitely would like to see more content. I mean, there's definitely more content, I think, that's touched on in Thronebreaker that they could use or venture into for further Witcher games, CD Projekt games, that is. So, and we know they're working on some, so who knows? Who knows?
Well, since this was already a busy week, well, last week we did our part one of things we want to see on the Xbox Series X. I'm going to go ahead and push part two to next week, and potentially if next week is E3 part two with the EA and Cyberpunk, we might actually save that for the week after next, but I'm going to push that, so we're not going to go over that this week because we had so much news, and we like to keep the show around an hour, hour and 15 to just be consistent. So that's it for this week. Looking ahead, I mean, we're going to have a lot of Star Wars next week, a lot of EA. We got Madden, so it's going to be another big week of news.
Lots of exciting content.
Oh, one final thought. You know, Xbox had originally said at the beginning of summer that they would have a stream monthly until the launch of Xbox Series X. But now Aaron Greenberg has said on Twitter that their next stream will be in July, which means they're skipping June. So it appears they're playing a little fast and loose with what monthly means. I don't know if they're talking like every 30 days or every calendar.
I think they're just hoping people didn't realize and that they aren't going to be taken to task over that, because I don't think it matters. I mean, I was asking you, I was like, is the June Inside Xbox happening? And you said, oh, well, it's been canceled or whatever. And July is the next one. So I think it makes sense. I think they should, what I said to you is that they should just kind of reorganize and kind of marshal their forces and have a big blowout show in July with a ton of actual exclusive content.
Yeah, the one thing I will say on that front is the PS5 reveal, all the interviews and human faces that they had talking to the camera, they were all on green screens and they had like cool graphics behind them, like CGI, that meshed with all of the intros and outros on all the content that they showed. So it gave a uniform feel, which kind of stood in stark contrast to the Xbox show, which was more, they had all of their developers talking from their spare bedrooms and their home offices, which in some way is a little of the times, right? Like they were just admitting what is happening in the world around us with coronavirus. Everybody's at home, so, you know, no need to try and hide it. But on the other hand, the PS5 event did come across as much more polished. So I really think that Xbox does need to step it up for what they do in July, because I mean, July is going to be what everybody remembers. You're revealing all the big games. From everything we know, July is the big blowout for Xbox Series X games. So you really need to wow us, and not wow us particularly, but wow people that are on the fence, people that don't know what they want to do with next generation, people that are happy with their PS4, but need to be convinced to buy a Series X. So from that perspective, I think they could stand to add a little bit of polish where possible. But, you know, things are limited. People are stuck home. Understand that things are what they are. But PlayStation could do it. Xbox could too.
I agree. I hope it's a lot more professional and professional event.
Well, that's it. That's all I got for this week. My voice is gone. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton.
I'm Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain and Rain101 on Xbox Live.
And I'm Gus Harden. You can follow me on Twitter at Gus_Harden.
See you next week.
New episodes of Multiform post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice.
Thank you.